What is going on, podcast listeners? I got a very special episode today with my boy, Danny Miranda. What's going on, Danny?
I am doing incredible. Just really honored to be on the podcast and really appreciate being here with you right now.
I appreciate the honor because I am extremely honored for this. If you guys are listening to this, Danny probably sounds like he has a really great radio voice because he hosts the Danny Miranda podcast. They have over 100,000 downloads per month. I believe he's interviewed some banger guests. He's interviewed Gary Vee, Alex Hormozi, Noah Kagan, and a bunch of other amazing people. So I'm super pumped to have you on. Thank you for hopping on the podcast, Danny.
My pleasure. Excited to talk about whatever we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, we'll see, man. We'll see where the conversation goes. It's so funny, Danny, because on your YouTube channel, the first video you have is you asking people like very pointed questions and kind of blowing their mind with how much in-depth research you've done, which I think is a fantastic video clip. And I was thinking before hopping on here, I'm like, dude, I wish I had something like, hey, remember you when you were in sixth grade and you had that nightmare about a clown? Like, tell me about that. I got nothing like that, unfortunately, but I'm curious, have you heard people ask you very in-depth interview questions where you're like, wow, they've actually done their research on me?
When I've been a guest on podcasts?
Yep, when you've been a guest.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. I mean, what's cool about being at the size that I'm at right now in terms of my reach is like a lot of times people who will ask me onto the podcast are real super fans of me and have listened to me on a bunch of different shows and have listened to me interview a lot of people. So yeah, it happens quite frequently, I would say at this point, which I'm really grateful for.
Yeah, I love, man. And I think something unique that Danny does with this podcast, which I think you're kind of famous for at this point, is the amount of research and in-depth questions you ask on your guests. And that's why I love some of your podcasts, some of the highest ranking ones, like the Hormozi one, blew up, right? And part of it's because he gave you such a nice take on, I think, on Eric's podcast, where he said, hey, Danny Miranda did a lot of research and people started listening to it from that. That's kind of how I found out about it too, Danny, where I saw that clip online. I'm like, oh, wow, what's this guy's podcast? And kind of went down the rabbit hole from there. So I do want to talk a little bit more about how you actually do what you do, because there's actually kind of art and science to it, which is what you have in your current course offering, which is the art of interviewing. Is that right? Like, you actually believe that it's not just natural ability to be a good radio host, you could actually back math and make this formulaic.
Yeah. I mean, from my perspective, it's like there are actual things that I do to make that interview so jaw-dropping to the guest. And those things are things that anyone could do. And that is part of the magic of what makes for an amazing episode is the amount of time that I spend with someone before I actually meet them when I'm face to face with them on the podcast.
Yep. Very cool. Danny, actually, for the people who don't know, I actually want to ask you about sharing your journey into podcasting. Because from what I understand, it wasn't something like you were a child and thought, hey, I want to be a radio host. I'm going to like go watch David Letterman. Like, you got into blogging, you got into drop shipping, you kind of ended up at podcasting. Can you tell me about that journey and how that happened?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's funny because I actually have a book on David Letterman right next to me right now. So go figure.
Yeah.
But when I was young, my mom and my grandma would always say, like, Danny, you have a great voice. You have a great voice. It was always like in the back of my head. But I never really put two and two together of how to use that in any way until July of 2020. But before July of 2020, I graduated college in 2018, and I said, I just want to make a bunch of money. I want to figure out how I can make money because I'm in the workforce now, and let me try to make a bunch of money. And so I started going down the route of drop shipping and e-commerce, and basically I had a Shopify store, and I would run Facebook ads, and I would have Alibaba would ship out products to people, and I wouldn't touch the products myself. And I did this for a year and a half, and I was like, I feel so unfulfilled by this. Like, I'm making money. I'm doing well. I'm living in San Diego with my friends. I have everything I want, but like, I don't feel good. I don't feel whole. And so the next year really was just an understanding of myself. I started meditating every day. I did 75 Hard, the program by Andy Frisella. Mm-hmm. I really started to pay attention to life and see what I was fascinated by and what I would do, whether money was part of it or not. And I just started going down that route. At first, I thought I was going to become a personal trainer. And then a little bit after that, COVID happened. And I asked myself, okay, like, what did I do as a child? What was I doing for the sake of doing it? And that was writing blog posts. And the blog posts turned into phone calls. I would write on Twitter, who wants to talk on the phone? And I would have these amazing phone conversations with people that I said to myself, oh, I should probably record these phone conversations with people. Hmm. And that turned into the podcast.
And I think there's a lot of angles with this. I think one thing I liked when I was reading about your story is the theme of fluidity. Now, there was, I had a previous host on the podcast who's actually one of our franchise owners, David. And people who listen to this podcast probably have heard him from earlier episodes. He's super into meditation. Now he's a Vedic meditation teacher. He ran 16 locksmith companies. And when he decided to get more into meditation, you know, I felt like something I always admire about him is how fluid he is. He'd be like, oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And he kind of like is able to move through life very fluidly. Ended up selling all his businesses and is full-time meditation teacher now. So can you tell me how meditation helped you make this career pivot? Because I feel like right now there's a lot of outside-in pressure. I got to make money. I got to do this. I got to have this freedom. Was meditation the real crux of what allowed you to make that pivot, or how did that journey happen for you?
Yeah. I mean, meditation for me, I view my life in two seasons. The first 24 years without meditation and 24 on. I'm 28 now. And that meditation is the single defining, the greatest decision of my life to start doing it and be consistent with it. And I still do it to this day. Meditated 20 minutes this morning, and I'm doing a 60-day meditation streak with my friend. So I'll be meditating for 60 minutes tonight. And so for me, meditation was the first time I could say to myself, oh, these are just the thoughts that are going on in my head are not actual, they're not my identity. They're just clouds. And what's so fascinating is that the reason why I'm still meditating to this day is like, it's similar to going to the gym. I have to constantly look at all the clouds that I picked up in that day and be like, okay, which one of these resonate? Which one of these don't? How did I misplay this moment? What did I do great today? And I just get to witness all of it when I meditate, when I sit with my thoughts, when I sit with what is. And you get to the truth so much clearer. I get to the truth so much clearer of what is what I actually should be doing. And without meditation, I wouldn't have had the understanding that to follow the flow of life, like your friend seems to do really well.
Interesting. And upon that, I think you kind of came to the conclusion like, huh, let me go full on creator mode podcast and like start interviewing a lot of people. And I know at the time you were building in public, and I have always advocated this because for me, it's been very transformational. And I think originally you're building in public for drop shipping. And then after a while, we're just like, let me start putting stuff online on this completely new topic and just torpedo my current audience? Like, was that a conscious decision at the moment?
So I just talk about what I'm interested in. Yeah. I don't think about like, okay, I'm going to build this audience and then I'm going to sell them this thing. And honestly, I'd probably be further along monetarily if I did think like that. I just don't have that bone in my body to be like, all right, let me reverse engineer how I'm going to build this company. I just talk about what I'm interested in. I just started running in the last 6 months, and now my feed is filled with running stuff and I'm posting running content on Twitter. And it's like, I never was interested in running a year ago. So I think, you know, for me, my personality is just do what is interesting and exciting and then share that. And then that to some people is called building in public. To me, that's just called sharing my thoughts. But yeah, similar idea.
Very cool, man. And in terms of the podcast, I think one of the earlier ones you got was getting Gary Vee on there in episode 39, super earlier on. And I remember hearing the story about how you actually did it. Would you mind sharing the story? Because I think it's kind of powerful in terms of what is possible if you want to get certain guests on your show or pretty much reach out to anyone.
For sure. So when I was 13 years old, I wrote this time management blog. And in 2020, when I started my podcast, 3 months into it, I put a list of my dream guests on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And Gary Vee was at the top of the list of my dream guests. And I remembered that I wrote a blog post about him when I was 13, shortly after writing the dream guest list. And I screenshotted the blog post that I wrote about him. He ended up following me from seeing that blog post. When he followed me, I tweeted out that he followed me. And people in the comments, just for the next 6 hours, started saying, you got to go on this guy's podcast. I mean, it was hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And eventually he said, for sure, I'll do it. And that was a transformational moment of my life, because I was like, this is a wink from the universe. This is amazing. I just started this podcast 3 months ago, and in one single day, I went from tweeting out my dream guest to now this guy's a hero of mine, is actually coming on the show. So that was a huge moment for me, and very foundational to the podcast.
Yeah, man. I love that. And going forward from that, and I think now you're in episode like 400 something, you're cranking out 3 episodes per week. I know your interview style has changed a lot over time. And, you know, possibly now is maybe even more in-depth research than it used to be. And one thing I want to ask you is, I guess number one, you probably ask a lot, how much time do you actually spend researching each guest?
Yeah, it's normally 5 to 10 hours per guest, but it's stopped. Like, I went through the season in the past few months of stopping the research and seeing what would happen if the research stopped and I could just have a conversation with the guest. And that's been an interesting experiment as well. And I might go back in the future to researching heavily. And I'm not really tied down like your friend. You know, I sound very similar to your friend. I'm not tied down to any approach. I'm just following the fun and curiosity of what is and just exploring as we're going. And I don't feel tied to any way that I've done it in the past, even if I'm known as the guy who does all the research. Like, what would happen if I don't do research? Could it still be as fun? Could it be as interesting? Could I see things that I otherwise wouldn't have seen if I was so focused on the research? Yeah. And now maybe I'll go back to the research. Like, I don't know. I find it all fun. I find it all like just playing with life. So at the peak of it, it was 5 to 10. But then if the guest like Hormozy was coming on, I'd do 20 or 30. So it's like, and now I do 0. So who knows? 0 to 30 is somewhere in the middle.
I'm curious if you found, I guess, a couple of things in terms of the conversation, in terms of fluidity with the conversation, or even how much fun you're having with the conversation. Does that change from what you've noticed with your current experiment of doing less versus doing more?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know yet. It's too soon to say. I tend to have more fun when the guests get some new insight about themselves. And sometimes that insight is given to me like in the conversation because I'm so present.
Yeah.
But then sometimes that insight is given to me before the conversation even starts because I've researched them so heavily. So the most fun for me is when the guests learn something about themselves or when we together come to a new insight that we both previously didn't know. To me, those are like the best moments.
Yeah.
And because we're creating in that moment, we're creating with life. And I'm trying to figure out what the best way is to get to those moments.
Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose it probably depends a lot on the guests too, like how open they are to sharing, how much storytelling you're going to get into, what you can probe. And a lot of that's kind of just out of the interviewer's hand. I think there's some maybe finessing you could probably do, but some of it's probably just like, it's a cool setting. Like I saw you're just on with Dan Coe on a freaking cliff top or something like that. And like, that probably allows you to be a little bit more fluid and like you're having fun and more open conversations. It's probably a lot of factors outside of just what questions you could ask them.
Yeah. And actually in that episode, I actually felt like we were both less fluid because behind the scenes there were 100 or 200 people who were just in the audience and kind of just there to see the sunset.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, because so many people are here, we are less likely to be ourselves because it's like we are taking up the space on this mountain that it's not that we weren't allowed to, but that it could stop some of the fluidity, which was interesting.
No, I got you. Interesting. And I actually do want to talk about the Art of Interviewing course you have and the actual science behind it. And for everyone listening, I've mentioned this a couple of times. Danny has, of course, the Art of Interviewing. He goes over how to like reach out to guests, how to actually do in-depth research and come up with questions and that just have a really good experience with it. Would you mind telling us a couple like banger tidbits from it that people, when they go through the course, they're like, oh my God, like I didn't know why I didn't think about that. I'm curious if you could share some of those.
Yeah, sure. So one thing that comes to mind is to, when using, I do a couple of different things when researching guests that I really haven't heard talked about anywhere else. One is to go to Twitter and search the person's Twitter handle and do min_faves, minimum faves, let's say 50 or 100. And you could see someone's most popular tweets pretty easily. And that could give you a sense for what they've put out into the world that is most interesting or insightful to other people.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that you could do is you could go to Google and you could search someone's name and their hometown and or their college. And when you do that, you're going to get coverage of that person that is more in depth than the normal profile piece that you're going to get. Because one, if their university or hometown has covered them, they're going to know them more clearly. And two, if it's just about them and someone mentions their university or hometown, that probably indicates that that person went deeper than other profiles of that person. So those are two tips that when researching anyone, whether you're interviewing or not, could be really helpful.
Yeah. Danny, I'm curious if I feel like a lot of people listening might think there's a balance between being well-researched and being kind of creepy when you ask questions. And I think a lot of it is how charismatic the host is. How can you ask the question without it being like kind of weird about it? But not everyone has that skill. What are your thoughts about that?
I've never felt creepy asking a question that's really deep and well-researched because I always feel like this is me just showing love to that person. I also tell them before we start, like, hey, we could take out anything you want because of the personal nature of this episode. So if someone does feel uncomfortable by something I ask, they always know in the back of their head that, oh, I could just remove this if I want.
Yeah.
They have final edit. They have final control. And I think part that makes me feel good of asking whatever I want to ask, even if it's the most personal or the most difficult question. I don't feel any hesitancy or feeling like I'm being creepy when I'm asking those.
Makes sense. Yeah. I mean, you're kind of leading with curiosity, right? And I think people know what they're getting into as well. So that changes the paradigm of it. Dan, you're all in on podcasting, right? Like that's what you do. That's what you're really passionate about. That's what you do really well. I feel like, especially with the creator economy right now, there's so many different like platforms and things people are doing. Like I'm sure people have told you, dude, you should get into X, Y, and Z. You should get into X, Y, and Z. But it seems like you're doing fantastic with staying in your lane, growing rapidly. Was that a conscious decision or is it kind of going back to the fluidity thing where you're like, dude, I just like doing what I'm like doing and I'm only going to focus on that?
Yeah, I like doing what I like doing. And right now that's podcasting. In the future, it might be writing a book. In the future, it might be writing a book and podcasting. In the future, it might be retreats. And if you like, there's so many different things that are exciting. I mean, it's like Run Club right now.
Yeah.
So I don't think about any of this as like a conscious decision. I just feel like I'm being used as a channel to experience what I'm experiencing and take some people along for that journey. And I don't put too much thought in like, this is the best thing for me to do to grow so that I can get to a certain, it's like, I'm just happy like right now. And I'm just doing what I find enjoyable in any given moment.
It's interesting as you say this because I felt this whenever I talked to my friend David, super into meditation, is very more fluid. My personal brain is such like a engineering thinker brain where I'm reverse engineering. It's everything's analytical. Everything's on the point. Like I have a goal with everything. I think part of that, what I'm realizing is that could allude to like some sort of fear of change, right? Like I feel like you're like, well, maybe in a year, I don't like podcasting. I'm going to stop.
Yep.
For most people, I would say that'd be like, what are you talking about? You're getting 100,000 downloads per month and you're just going to stop. I don't know if it's like a fear of change a lot of people feel. I would just assume, by the way, I'm projecting myself as how most people generally are going to feel. If you're doing something successfully, it feels like I can't change. And I'm curious on your thoughts and what you would say to people about that when they're kind of like, people who might have golden handcuffs, they're in a job they hate. People who have success in their career, they think, I can't change it. Here you are saying, I have a very successful podcast, but if I don't want to do it in a couple years, I'm not going to do it. Can you walk me through that mindset?
Yeah. I mean, the mindset is that the nature of life is change. And you are not the same person you were 10 years ago. You're not the same person you were 5 years ago. You're not the same person you were last year. You're not the same person you were yesterday. But sometimes, and in some moments, we realize this change. And we realize like, oh, I really am not the person I was 10 years ago. Oh, I really am not the person I will be in 10 years. So we understand that from like the decade perspective. And we can understand maybe from 5 year perspective and maybe the three and maybe the year. But I'm here telling you like, this is true from like day to day as well. And that doesn't mean we can't have consistency in our personality, in our being, but it also means we don't have to be attached to any of it. We don't have to be attached to, I am a podcaster, so therefore I need to do a podcast. It's just like, I am the consciousness that's watching me being a podcaster. Yeah. And so if I'm just watching me being a podcaster, I have no attachment to this thing that I'm, that people think I'm good at, right? I just enjoy watching the experience of what is. And that whole thing to me is like the reason for being on this earth, of just like watching the experiences that unfold. And so if I'm just watching the experience, then I don't need to be so, like, I don't need, there's no identity for me as a podcaster that is just like, you need to do this. And that's kind of been my perspective. And that is the reason why I just have no attachment to doing the podcast or not doing the podcast. I just do what I find enjoyable and just enjoy watching that experience as well.
Yeah, I love that. Kind of goes back to forever thinking. And I'm sure you've heard of this term. For many times, people think the decision they make is a forever decision. Like in 2020, I stopped traveling. And I was like, oh, well, I'm making the decision. I'm not going to be a nomad. That's a forever decision, right? And every decision feels so monumental that it adds so much pressure. Even when people are getting in the business, they think, I got to pick the right business model because it's going to be what I do forever, which is totally not true. There's a lot of fluidity in everything. And I think someone like yourself could see the fluidity on a day-to-day basis. Someone like myself in business understands, of course, your business is going to change. It is how it is. But I do think a lot of people really hone into that forever thinking. And it's tough because sometimes, like, you're taught when you're 18, like, pick a major because that's what you're going to be for the rest of your life. And you're taught constantly, whatever decisions you make will be permanent. Where the reality is, most of the time, that's not true. And especially as it relates to identity, that doesn't have to be true at all.
Yeah, that's really well said. And I think if you look at the nature of change for previous generations, it was inherently less than ours. And we have gotten used to more change happening in shorter and shorter timeframes. If 500 years ago, you probably would choose a career and that would be it.
Yeah.
But today, someone could have 10 different careers in 10 years, like genuinely. So I think that, part of that is also, and my comfortability is being 28 years old and seeing the rapid change of social media platforms and how people's careers could change and seeing how someone could be doing something for a year and then go to something else and be successful at it. So I think part of it is the time I was born as well that has made me comfortable with the changing nature of all things.
Yeah. And Dan, I'm sure you saw the stat where they were surveying kids in grade school and they're asking them back in like 20 years ago, they would ask, what do you want to be when you grow up? Most people would say professional athlete or musician. That's what most people say. Currently, do you know what the answer is?
YouTuber.
Creator. That's what everyone wants to be. Everyone wants to be Mr. Beast. Everyone wants to be a famous podcaster, something like that. That's what people want to get to. Yeah. My question for you, Danny, is since you're in this space, and I feel like you were kind of a good example of after a handful of episodes, you were able to kind of find your rhythm, figure out what you want to do and actually go into it. My question is, can anyone be a creator and should everyone be a creator?
No, not everyone should be a creator. I mean, there's so much that goes into it that is behind the scenes that most people probably wouldn't want to deal with or handle. But I mean, I think everyone should try to be a creator or create something that they're interested in. And if everyone sets themselves, okay, I'm going to create for 90 days straight, or I'm going to do 100 podcast episodes, or I'm going to do 100 videos, or I'm going to do 100 pieces of writing. Like, all those are versions of being a creator, which are so different, like podcaster, writer, you know, a comedian's a creator. So like, creator is a term for so much, and I think everyone should try to like do something creative that is inherent to their being. Like, your life gets better by virtue of you creating stuff.
Yep.
It just does. Yep. And so, yeah, I would say everyone should try.
Cool. I like that answer. Cool. As we wrap up over here, Danny, if people here have not heard of you and actually want to get to know you a little bit better, where can they find you?
I'm probably most active on Twitter at Hey Danny Miranda and the Danny Miranda podcast, available wherever you listen or watch your podcast.
Perfect. And we'll put links to those in the show notes as well as the Art of Interviewing if you want to check that out. Danny, It's been an honor having you on. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the thoughtful questions.